to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 174. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, or whatever tickles our Linux fancy. And by our fancy, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine. And I am joined by my co-host, as always, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Coop. Okay. Freezing cold. Woke up today literally to, I think it was 6 degrees or 7 degrees. Temperature, and it was, I told my wife, she's lucky we carpooled, because if we didn't, I would call up and take a day off, because no one should go out in that kind of temperature.
I know what you mean. I looked outside my door today, and it was 47 degrees, and I thought, ooh, it's a bit chilly. Turned on.
I had ice on my windows this morning.
And that person who had ice on his windshield this morning is Martin Rambo Obando. How's it going, Rambo?
It's going good. Ice good. Machine. That sounds kind of weird. Sorry. Hey, Cody.
That's okay.
I'm testing it out. It didn't roll off very well for me.
Well, I was going to say, I love the fact that I got some ice car techniques tips earlier this week from a guy in Texas. Yes, Texas. Where he says he gets great results without using an ice scraper, but he uses a machete.
Yeah, a machete?
A machete, to which I didn't ask. I didn't want to ask him why he had a machete.
Well, he said he had a machete in his truck for a long time.
For a long time.
Because, you want to know why? Because everything's Texas. Bigger in Texas. That's right.
I don't know.
That is an ice scraper in Texas.
Hold on. Let me do an Australian accent by way of Texas. Oh. That ain't a knife. No, that can't do it. No. Anyway, yeah.
It was close, though.
He said he had it because he had to hack up a tree or a shrub or something. And he just put it in his, and he's left in his car kind of thing.
Sure. Yet he has it on a scabbard on his hip wherever he goes.
Exactly. And then he used it, he said, to clear the ice off his sidewalk.
Off his sidewalk?
And all I could think of were sparks every time he hit the ground.
All I could think of was, dude, there ain't no pictures. It didn't happen.
That's right. That's like, well, I bought this flamethrower off of a flea market last year. I just didn't buy a snowblower this year. I just, clear the snow that way. It works, and I'll tell you what, keeps those damn kids off my lawn.
I didn't happily buy one of them.
Hell yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah, the first, just real quick, I'll say is I want to thank everyone for all their support with Amazon, but I want to say eBay, and I think we did actually say it a couple weeks ago, eBay did technically change their policy to where now if you go to podnos.com/eBay, instead of getting what I swear was 0.001%, a.k.a. we didn't even get like $100 in 3 years or something like that, they've changed their affiliate policy to now something more respectable. So if you do partake in the eBay, even if you sing while you do it, you can go to podnos.com/eBay, don't pay any more for your product, and you get Podnos a little change.
And I still buy eBay stuff on eBay on a regular basis. What I did buy recently, though, and I did this intentionally because I had such a good experience the last time around, I bought a couple Raspberry Pi 2s on eBay because obviously the resellers there, they were in stock during the out-of-stock period of the normal resellers. However, I bought a couple of them from a reseller down in California just south of me, and I'll get them in a couple days. And I did the same thing for my Raspberry Pi Model A's when I bought them, gosh, almost two years ago, yeah. But yeah, used the link, and nothing different looking on my end, but I know that Podnos gets a little kick of it, so all the better. I still go on there and buy comic books and some rare video games every once in a while, too.
I know. I'll just say thank you, but you're technically breaking policy.
I mean, I have a friend who knew that he did that. That he told me today. He right. Bought the stuff.
And it's one of those things. I really don't want to. I don't like sounding preachy kind of thing. But if we are making money off this kind of thing, I don't want to. Well, I guess mess it up.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're going to Amazon, you're going to eBay. Use our podnuts.com/eBay or Amazon link. You're not paying any more than you would normally. Those purchases you're going to make already goes to benefit the network because we do have costs associated with these shows that are free to you. So we do appreciate it. Thank you.
And I did use eBay this, honestly, like a week and a half ago.
There you go.
Because I had the itch to play Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. And I searched down. I found the console and went and blew all the dust off the top. And then I picked up the game, started looking through the games. Like, oh, I forgot about that game. That's a good game. Oh, I forgot about that game. That's a good game. And then I noticed, for some reason, I had Majora's Mask, which I hate, but I didn't have Ocarina of Time on the N64. So I got really mad, went on eBay and did a rage buy for that N64 card.
Oh, very cool. I got an N64 floating around in my garage somewhere, and I'm on vacation in a couple weeks. One of my jobs is to dig everything out of there, and I'm really hoping I'm going to find two things.
A Rumble Pack?
Rumble Pack would be cool. No, three things I should say. My boxes of classic consoles, which I will bring in my living room, my office, because I have a 27-inch CRT. I'll hook that up so the boys can start playing, you know, get them properly educated. Number two, I have an HP Jornada somewhere in there. That's an old pocket PC. I'm looking for it's cool. I have all the fixings for that. And then my Gen 1 TiVo, which I'm looking specifically just to cannibalize the hard drive.
Good man.
I'm just going to pull the hard drive out of it, toss it in the recycle bin, say adios, and that's it. Yeah,
that's only like a 20 gig hard drive.
It don't matter. It's mine, and I'm going to use it. I'm going to abuse it.
Exactly. and Jonathan, I want to transition horribly to just a mini rant real quick.
Sure.
Okay. This is an extreme stretch. I'll throw this out there. Extreme stretch, people. But this is how this kind of thing affects me. And I'm not – so what I'm saying here, it is not like fact written in stone tablets. This is just how I feel. Okay. There are companies out there that quote-unquote support Linux by selling hardware with Linux on it, but they don't. They sell products with Ubuntu on it. And when I hear that, I have like a thing like sticking me in the back of the neck that I can't just ignore, that I almost relate to. It's almost like they're racist about distros. They're distroist or something, to where if you would call them up and say, well, can I get Gentoo on it? Can I get OpenSUSE on it? Can I get Driva on it? Hell, could I even get Mint on it? Or whatever the company puts. No, they put Ubuntu on it. You can put whatever you want on after the fact. Why on this ecosystem would you limit yourself to one distribution? And as far as I know, only contribute back to that one distribution. Now, that I could be wrong, but I don't like a company that does that. To me, it's almost the equivalent in my mind, which is not reality, to being like a white supremacist. I'm positive about white people, but you're actually kind of being negative about all the rest of the people when you only support the one distribution, which is the reason why I support Think Penguin. ThinkPenguin.com. Computers, laptops, hardwares, accessories, swag, you can get from them. They support Linux. They don't support Ubuntu or just one distribution. They support Linux. You can put in your request, you want Gentoo installed. And guess what? They're going to install Gentoo on your computer. God help you, but they'll even do that for you. And if you shop there, contact us, Podnuts, podcast at linuxfortherestofus.com, and I'll give you a coupon code. Save some money while you find yourself some good hardware from a reputable company that supports Linux as a whole.
So you're talking about the benefits of ThinkPenguin.
Yeah, and it's just one of those companies that I really like supporting because it's like, you know, what I at least used to say a lot back in the day, support those who support you. Support those who support Linux, not just one distribution, one version of Linux.
There you go. And now, since you went on a rant, I'm gonna withhold myself from going on a rant. But what I will say is that when people ask me what kind of laptop should I buy, Cody, I want one that's gonna run good with Linux. I want one that's gonna hold up to the wear and tear of everyday tech and everyday user. And I always used to say you gotta get a Lenovo, but now I can't.
Okay. We all, me, Martin, and Cody, talked about this a little bit pre-show in Voxer chat. I'm, I think, more on the Martin side. And the equivalent thing that Martin said was, when Target got hacked, you should not say, I'm never going to go to Target again. I can't believe Target would do that kind of thing. Because this happens to every company, and it will happen to every company sooner or later, just because it seems like, if they're a big enough target, I'll say. And like what Martin kind of said in the chat was, the day it happened, the very next day, I'm going to Target. Why? Because that's when they are going to be at their absolute safest. I don't have nothing to worry about when I go in there. My credit card's not going to get breached that day. The only other reason I didn't worry about it was because as soon as I got the laptop, first thing I did was I installed Linux. I blew up the hard drive.
Right, right. It's not that I would be worried about someone falling prey to it. And the Target credit card breach analogy somewhat holds up. And yes, it, logically, that's very sound. But the fact of the matter is that they, in this case, made a conscious decision to include this software.
Somebody did.
Somebody at that company, yeah. Somebody that was placed in that position by someone above them in that company made a conscious decision to put that Superfish software on those machines, period. Right. Well, now, either, either they audited it properly and knew exactly what it was doing, or they didn't. Either way, they are at fault, and I personally don't want to give my money to a company that will purposely do that, regardless of whether I'm going to buy the machine, rip the hard drive out, throw no one in, and throw something else on it, and not personally be affected by the software. Now, yes, that's not to say I'm not blinders on saying, oh, there's no way HP did that, there's no way Dell did that. We don't know, but the fact of the matter is, this comes up. If you're drinking a certain soda every day, and all of a sudden you find out, actually, you know what? This company allowed a certain amount of fecal matter to fly by in their product. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, once that gets leaked, I'm not drinking that soda again. I'm not eating at that restaurant anymore.
Well, and I'll say, fault is a word I think I wouldn't use in that situation. They're ultimately responsible for, yes, because the buck has to stop someplace.
Right.
Superfish on itself isn't evil, malicious, or bad. It was just a tool. It was a tool they used to, and what I understand, what its real goal was to remove and inject different ads into your web viewing experience, which I don't like and I'm not in favor of, but that's what it was really for. It just so happened that it's exploitable. I don't know if Lenovo could have known that beforehand. Granted, I think they should have, but I don't know if they could have known that beforehand. And I'll say, I literally, when I heard about that, pulled out my external hard drive, restored native Windows on it straight from the factory because I imaged it, restored it, opened it up. There's no Superfish on the one that I have. What I hate about all these websites is they're all clickbait jerks, because I cannot find a single article anywhere just telling me the facts without biased opinions on top of it. I want to know,
of course,
how many laptops are infected, what models of laptops are infected, when did this start, when did this stop? Because the impression I got, it was only one model of laptop, and I don't know if it was even sold to consumers.
What I was reading, it was between September and December of 2014. But that's all I know. But it's the same, it is exactly the same, so the Superfish is exactly the same injection as the in-flight, what is it, Go-Go, that you can get on airlines.
Yeah,
Go-Go. It's the exact same one. They just put it on a hard drive on this one as opposed to doing it. But it's not the only product out there that does third-party injections, because what the injection does is it changes itself to a self-signing SSL cert, and that's how it can inject it. Kaspersky has been known to do that and has done that for a long time, and that's how it's supposed to keep you safe.
Right. Do you know who else does that?
I know there's another antivirus program, right?
Well, no, not even antivirus. Amazon tablets with their built-in browser has this option. Right. Opera browser, Opera Mini, has the exact same thing built in, and they call it a feature. So I say what Superfish was a knife or a gun. It's not good, it's not bad, it's just a tool. It just so happens, once in a while, that gun would backfire and blow a finger off of you, because it sounds like it wasn't executed right, and the company behind it, I don't think, is a company I would have liked any company I'm dealing with to deal with. So I do think it was a very poor decision.
Well, I think it was implemented wrong. I mean, and really, from a let's play. I'm gonna play devil's advocate. I'm Lenovo. I want to do injection of advertisements into it. Indiegogo, or not Indiegogo, but the in-flight Go-Go. You go, okay. All these other ones, you go, okay, this was portrayed or it was injected and implemented almost as a rootkit-ish, you know? And I think the implementation makes it worse because you're not just throwing ads. You're not just, you know, you're not just going around and handing out flyers and putting on people's doors. You're opening up doors. You're walking inside their house and you're shoving this flyer in their face. Yeah. There's a right way of doing it and a wrong way of doing it. You may not like it, but it's advertising. And I think the way they did it, I'm going to have to say they just did it wrong.
Yeah, if they would have just given the simple option during like purchase, if you want to opt in to this cost-saving measure, save $50 on your laptop and you'll see Lenovo ads kind of thing, I don't think people would have freaked out as much. But I'll say it's also like that TV. I can't remember if it's Samsung or Sony.
Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung. You're watching
that hears everything.
No. You're watching a movie on DVD.
In the middle of the movie,
it pauses it and shows commercials.
Yeah, that would. Oh my god.
So a lot of companies out there are messing up, Cody. A whole lot of companies out there are messing up.
I have a friend who's in.
You know what? You know what's going to prevent them from messing up? Lack of revenue.
Well, I know, but most people don't care about it. That's a shame.
Everybody has to draw their line in the sand. Sure. All I know is I plan on spending my annual bonus on a nice laptop this year, and now I can't justify buying a Carbon X2. I just can't.
Well, but your new Carbon X2 won't have that on there, though.
Exactly. I'm
just, well, thank you, Martin. And a backwards way of kind of looking at this is that you could say that Lenovo is really supporting Linux because Linux isn't affected by this.
Right.
Right. Well, so
and to bring it around real quick. I'm a supporter of ThinkPenguin a lot, but no one company supplies every possible need from every consumer. And when I went and looked at ThinkPenguin, I didn't see a light enough, big enough, powerful enough laptop that fit my needs. That's why I picked a Lenovo Flex 15, because I wanted a touchscreen, hoping I could install Android dual boot off of it just to play around. And they didn't have that option at ThinkPenguin when I bought my box. So I went with Lenovo. Strictly and utterly based upon hardware build. And I can say that even before the Superfish thing, I didn't buy them because of their software prowess. It was strictly a hardware decision. And I'm sad it happened to that company. I really wish it would have happened to HP. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think that is some of it that makes it worse, is that it happened, you know, you hate to see bad things happen to good people, and you go, and Cody, and that's the reason that you're frustrated, because you, if it had an HP, you'd be like, okay, HP, another story, let's move on. But it happened to you, and you had your mind set on this new gift that you were going to get yourself, and happened to be from this company, and so now you're angry and frustrated, as you should be, because you can't, you are willing to draw the line in the sand. Because you don't want to support them. But that's not bad. I'm just saying that is what it is.
The fountain is now tainted.
Yes.
I'm thinking of a specific scene from Caddyshack here. Something's floating in the pool.
But I think the fountain has always been tainted. I think you just finally put out your water tester and
tested it. I don't know. I used to say, you know, you could beat a cougar to death with one of these Lenovos, but now the cougar has to suffer through 2 or 3 minutes for the ads and then be bludgeoned to death.
Maybe that's the suffering right there. Maybe that is the suffering.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, I could go on about this forever. Anyway, stay tuned. I will honestly... And you know what? I could go back on this. It's my money. I can do what I want. All I know is... They're very uncomfortable. I don't want to sleep on these.
Stand up on it?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I'll let you sleep on mine.
Okay. Okay. Don't you have an old 420S or 420 to T420 or something?
I do, but the one that I have is... I do have one of those, actually.
Does it have Superfish on it?
No, because it's only from December 2014 to September 2014.
I was joking, Martin. I know.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, but it has COD.
Okay, I'll take it.
Halibut, red snapper.
We have to move on. Yes, I don't want any bottom feeding fish, please. I'll take tilapia and Pacific Northwest.
Hey, that red snapper, that's a good choice.
Ooh, very tasty.
Sorry.
UHF reference. Okay, here we go. All right. So, getting into the meat of the show, we're going to answer an email right off the bat, which we got today from Marcus in Munich, Germany. Marcus writes in, he says, hello, Steve and Cody. I was listening to your podcast recently for the first time, and I like it very much.
Well, we just lost him.
Come on, look at this. And so he says, It is a pity that I didn't discover it earlier. I have to catch up a lot now. You mentioned several times that you have some experience. You mentioned several times that you have some experience in penetration testing. I am also very interested in this field. At the moment, I am preparing for my CCNA certification because I think that it would be a solid foundation. However, I am not sure which way to go after that. Of course, I played a little bit with Kali Linux because it is often said to be the de facto standard as a pen testing distro. So I saw that Offensive Security also offers certifications in pen testing. Have you heard about this, and do you have any experience with it? In general, what would be the way you would recommend to learn penetration testing so that I can work professionally in IT security afterwards? All the best, Marcus. I have to say off the bat, I was talking with Dor about this earlier today, and Marcus, if I have given you any inkling or any indication that I have pen testing experience, I am sorry, I don't. Dor, do you have extensive pen testing experience?
I think I gave him that impression because a couple times in the last episode, at least twice, I did say pen testing. And I say it in more of a jealousy kind of thing of the prestige of pen testing, because that's really, I think, where there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of changes, there's a lot of knowledge, and there is a lot of money.
Yes.
Okay, I don't own a gun in my house. I don't want my wife to shoot me, okay? Or me accidentally, quote-unquote, shoot her. But for the same reason, I don't dabble in pen testing either. I don't want to go to jail. And I know me, and I know I might, you know, walk into Starbucks or McDonald's and, ooh, and I don't want to do it. So I actually know nothing about pen testing. But what I do know about pen testing is Kali Linux is one of the key tools just because it had so much stuff baked in, number one. Number two, if you want this as a career, the bottom line is if you don't spend money, you ain't going to make any money. This is a money field. Basically, SANS is the place to go, SANS.org. Offensive Security is good. Don't get me wrong. It's good. They're the people who make one of the penetration suites, one of the applications, I can never remember the name of it, that Paul Asadorian is the host of the podcast for Offensive Security kind of thing.
No. It's Paul's Security Weekly, but there's the SANS Institute, and then he works for Tenable, right?
Yeah, Tenable, who I believe is Offensive Security. That's their other website. But SANS is they're the big boys. They're the people who literally make a lot of the course curriculum, and that's the company where if you're into security and you say SANS, everybody will instantly give you credit. The problem with SANS, quote-unquote, is it is ridiculously expensive. It is literally like $3,000 a class for 4 days kind of expensive, but it's the best. All I can say is if you really want to play you first have to play with something before you're an expert at it. That's the bottom line. So yes, install Kali. Yes, play with it on your own home network. Don't go out into Starbucks. Don't go into a 9-to-5 job. Don't go into a hospital and start playing with Kali. Play with it on your own home network, number one. Mm-hmm. One of the fun ways I can tell you that you can play with it is if you go to kali.org/kali-linux/nethunter. If you own a Nexus, a 5, 7, or 9, I believe it is, you can install Kali Linux. It's the 5, 7, or 10, sorry. You can install Kali Linux on your device and play with it. This is a great way that if you do get a job, you can easily travel light if you're doing literally covert pen testing, which is real and does happen. That's one of your jobs you got to do. Unfortunately, with such an active field and a field with such high demand, you're going to have to pay money to really be good at it and get a job in it, unless you are literally willing to spend 5 to 10 years working your way up in a place.
I don't know. I've signed up for this company. They do have pen testing. It's Cyberry IT, CYBARY.IT. One of the course, and they have CompTIA A+, cryptography, but they have cryptography, penetration testing and ethical hacking, computer and hacking forensics, and then your CCS ISP or CISSP, point exploration, exploitation, you know, So check that out. That's Cybary, CYBARY.IT.
Very cool.
And it's, their sites are free and their videos.
Awesome.
I agree with everything you guys just said. I kind of want to expound on that a bit. Whether it's dabbling in your own home network or getting into a course, anything that provides you with an arena, so to speak, to play with this to where you are safe from potential prosecution and you're learning at the same time, it's going to be beneficial to you. I personally have installed Kali. I installed Kali to use. I used it for a couple weeks, but the main reason I installed it is that I then saw from within the distro all the tools that were available, and then I was able to catalog a list of those tools and then research those individually. Because when it comes to a lot of this stuff, I don't know anything. So just by getting that list of applications and saying, oh, this does this, okay, and then kind of down the rabbit hole I go, then I gained more knowledge that way. So, yeah, it's absolutely free. It doesn't cost anything. You know, at least play around with it. That also being said, whenever I go into anything that I want to learn about, I first search for books and then I search for podcasts. If you're not listening to Paul Security Weekly, it's an amazing show. And from there, they have guests on from other security podcasts all the time. They talk about a lot of these tools because these guys work for those big companies that do a lot of this pen testing stuff as their day job. So that would be a fantastic resource for you to do too. But when it comes down to it, even Kevin Mitnick will say this, you know, you could have all the tools in the world. You could have all the passwords. You could have access directly to the machine. But one thing that's going to get you there every time is just good old fashioned social engineering. And I can speak to that. I've studied that quite a bit. Knowing what to say, how to dress, how to be nice to get access to certain rooms. Dor and I were talking about this earlier. For instance, years ago, I went to and this was back when I was just starting to learn about this. I was invited to host a event, and I went to this big convention center. And part of hosting the event, or part of just being part of the event, was that you got this huge catered dinner. And it wasn't just a buffet style, like, you know, fried chicken under heat lamps. I mean, this was a gourmet dinner. And it was held at this convention center. And then on my way out, I looked at the calendar, and they're hosting one of these every single week. So for 3 out of the next 8 weeks, I just walked in, got a name tag, and just went and had dinner. I sat down, talked to people for about 5, 10, 15 minutes, and then just left. Because it's so easy to gain access to these places. If you're pretending to be there, and if you're nice, then yeah, you can accomplish quite a bit. But it's getting you in the door. Then you need to know what to do when you get in there. And experimenting with these tools in a safe environment, that'll be beneficial to you.
I walked onto a movie set the same way.
Nice.
I knew what they were addressing, how they did certain things, and I did. It came back, and I just walked right on the set.
Nice.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll say I wish there was a college course on social engineering. Because I would go back to college just to take that course.
If you want to study social engineering, don't just leave it. Don't just do that. Just don't leave it there. With social engineering, there's an author, Christopher Hadnagy. He's written at least two, and I think he has a third book on the way. Just go to Amazon or podcast.com/Amazon, search for social engineering, and he will be one of the top five books in there. One of them is Unmasking the Social Engineer, I believe, and the Social Engineering Toolkit, I think. The other one, both really good books. But then also, if you really want to delve deep into that, and I'm going to cut this short because we have a longer show to do, also lurk into the book Persuasion. And there's a good book, The Art of Persuasion. And there's a good book, Influence, like How to Influence People. That's another good one, too.
Very cool. Before we go into our next thing, I'm going to mention a contest giveaway thingy thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
All you have to do is go to podcast.com/... Linux for the Rest of Us Club. That's all you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're entered in the contest. The contest, now listen to the verbiage very carefully, is you win a Ubuntu phone. You don't win the Ubuntu phone. You win a Ubuntu phone. And the reason you don't win the Ubuntu phone is because the thing doesn't work in America unless you're okay with, I think it was 2x speeds or 1x speeds and only, I think it was voice or text messaging.
Yeah, it was 2G or Edge data, nothing above that, not even 3G, no chance for 4G LTE, nothing like that. And you're looking at a lower end device. But but we are installing Ubuntu Touch on a device and giving it away. What device is that?
It is a U.S. carrier usable Nexus 4. Now, 99.9% sure this phone will work on T-Mobile and AT&T. I can't confirm that. I do know it works on T-Mobile because I got it. I put a SIM card in and I dialed a number. And it is a complete, fully functioning Ubuntu Touch interface running the current stable release, which is, I believe, if I read it right, more up to date than what is available on the quote unquote the Ubuntu phone. So it's fully functional. It's fully usable. It's on T-Mobile. It's free. It also comes with a bumper case, I believe it is, on the edge of it. And all you got to do is join the club. No retweeting, no mentioning, no quizzes, no hoops to jump through, no podcast bombing other podcasts, mentioning our site kind of thing. It's just join the club where you are guaranteed to get no spam ever.
Yep. And I've played with, and regardless, I mean, even if you're, I mean, the Nexus 4 is a great phone. And yeah, you're talking about T-Mobile and AT&T, two of the larger four carriers out of the United States. You know, you're going to be able to use it. Dork got to play with it for a bit. I'm going to give it a spin, test it out. I will say that looking at videos of side-by-side comparison from Ubuntu Touch to install the Nexus 4 next to the actual Ubuntu phone made by BQ, the performance is just milliseconds apart. Sometimes device A is a little bit better, sometimes device B is a little bit better. But overall, for anybody to use it in the U.S., this is a much better option. And the Nexus 4 is the highest-end phone device that runs the stable version of the current ROM. If you want to go to install it on a Nexus 5 or like any of the Samsungs, it's like the experimental build, which has a lot of things that don't work. So this was literally the most stable device we could get with the best experience within the United States to give away to you for absolutely nothing, as long as you're a member of the Linux for the Rest of Us club.
And if you're outside the U.S., I believe T-Mobile is one of the most world-accessible bands of phones. So there's still a chance you can run with it and play with it. And I'll say, here's the beautiful thing about it. Here's what's better about it than the Ubuntu phone. If you get it and you play with it and you don't like it, it's very easy to install Android on it and run with it. And it is, I will say, for the age of the device, because I do believe it's nearly 2 years old, if not, it's a really good functioning device. Smoother and faster than I thought running Android. Really shocking how well Ubuntu Touch runs on, even though anything has to be lighter than Android. I'll say that.
Right. And we'll be announcing the winner on the show for that in the next couple weeks, Dor. Is that correct?
Yeah. We are recording tonight on the 24th of February. The goal, I'm going to say, is March the 10th to be the night of the giveaway.
There you go. Cool. Plenty of time to join the club and let us know what you think of the device if you win it. We can't wait to hear what you think, because Dor and I would have already previewed the device and then send it along for absolutely free.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Bring him, Dor. Okay. So, Martin, you brought a good piece of business to the show, talking about a new Clonezilla Live CD. Can you speak about that?
Yeah. Well, Clonezilla is my choice of imaging software. There's a lot out there, but I've just used Clonezilla for so long. Well, they came out with a new release, probably within the last couple of days. Definitely fairly new. So it's release number 2.32 or 2.3.2.22. Anyways, the couple things that really stood out to me on this instance were the default volume size was always set at 2,000 megs. And usually when I create an image, I'll just go in and I'll hit, you know, like five or six more zeros. I'll make one volume size file instead of it chopping up in a little bit. Well, what they've done now is they've changed that to 4096. So 4096 now. And I did test that on my machine just to check and make sure. So that's kind of cool. But the big thing is that now it can be used to clone Chromium OS and Chrome OS. So you can get your Chromebox, clone it, and have it off to the side, so that way, whenever it goes downhill, you can just restore right back from that image. And that was kind of the big one that stood out to me.
Now, Martin, you also have some experience in education machine deployment, correct?
Right. Right.
Now, in what I know about CloneZilla and how I've used it in the past, wouldn't this be a great way to, let's say, at the end of a school year, reformat in mass like all those Chromebooks for that classroom?
Well, yes and no, because you can reformat Chromebooks just as they are. There's a certain key combination that restores them, redownloads the latest packages, and then brings it back fresh. I've done that before. So right. What this would be used for, would not necessarily for that, because we at the end of the school year, we want to wipe them and start brand new fresh. Yeah, so yeah. I wouldn't need to create an image for that, because it would actually take just about as long, if not longer, to deploy that image through CloneZilla than it would be to just to go through and reset the 30 Chromebooks that we have. What okay. I would probably use this for would be to, you're having your Chromebook, you're messing with it, and you're going to do something with it. Maybe, because we're going to stick, at the school, we stick with native Chrome OS. So we're not really tweaking and hacking and messing with it. It's I want to take an image of this now, so then when I go and I tweak and hack with it and I want to spin Linux on it, or I want to adjust it, or I want to do something else with it, it breaks, you can go back to your default. That's what I would use it for, not necessarily in the educational one, the way that I would use it.
I was just trying to avoid touching all those filthy machines after those little heathens have used them all year.
Well, I wear gloves.
Okay. Yes. There's the cheaper solution. Latex gloves, check.
Check. Chrome OS, check. No, it's a private school, so they're pretty clean there.
Right. Well, still, germs are germs. I'm just
saying. But they are 7th and 8th graders, so never mind.
Oh, yeah, so they're definitely filthy.
Yeah. And I'll say this. A lot of people out there have a knee-jerk reaction when seeing the CloneZilla interface to equating it with something older or less powerful. I will say this is one of the things, hear me now, believe me later. Look at the feature list on CloneZilla and look at a lot of the other imaging software, especially the ones that cost money. Look at their feature list, and I can virtually guarantee you CloneZilla is either on par or surpasses them in a great many ways. It isn't the perfect solution for all of your imaging needs. It is, though, one of the best imaging pieces of software you can get anywhere. Robust, stable, lots of support, and it has been around for a long time. It's one of those pieces of software. It ain't going nowhere.
Right. And it does have its drawbacks, and I know that. There's a lot of imaging products out there that you can image it. You can go into the image. You can add, remove data, files. This, you can't. You know, one of the things that I did when I was working in education was about every 6 to 8 months, I would have to pull the CloneZilla image down, re-update the computers, and then push the image back up. You can't, you know, there's a lot of other programs that you can update without having to mess with the image. CloneZilla is not like that, so there's a drawback for that. But I think its simplicity makes it functional. And for the years that I've used CloneZilla, I've probably just scratched the surface of its power. And every now and then I learn something new. And it's tiny enough that I just run right off my Pixieboot server. And so I never have to carry CDs with me again. And it images to, Samba shares, local disks. So depends on if I have my portable drive with me, it'll image there. One of the other drawbacks is that it cannot easily image to a smaller size hard drive, because the image is based on, because when you image it, you say image disk. And so if you have a 250 gig hard drive, even though you're only using 80 gigs out of that, you can't go put it on a 120 gig hard drive because it says 250. You can force it. It's not pretty, but you can do that. Then say you have that 250 gig hard drive and you put on a 500, when you boot up, especially in Windows, you're going to boot up and it's going to say you only have 250. You need to go into your disk manager and make it bigger. Expand it. So there are some limitations in that aspect, because it feels like it's powerful and just raw, but it works well, and it has been my go-to for many, many years.
Yeah,
but realistically, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the only feature it doesn't have, which I really wanted it to have, was what Cronus and Ghost call Universal Restore, which Martin hinted about. Taking it from one hardware and imaging it onto a different piece of hardware. In the Windows world, you need to have a feature commonly referred to as Universal Restore. There are other paid software out there that does that. CloneZilla doesn't. It's the one thing I really wish it did, because that, I think, would satisfy a lot of people's gripes.
So with that specifically, you're talking about like different architectures?
Yes, from like a Intel chip to AMD. Which really is not the issue. The real issue is hard drive chipset driver. That's the only one I know of that can actually cause an instantaneous blue screen and not boot.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't ran into that issue as much because, but then again, that's why I have, you know, an image for, you know, in the school that I have 13 different images. I have one for each laptop that we have. It kind of creates a pain and is it the most effective? No, but I can image a computer in nothing flat and, you know, I can push it out all the time. I still haven't messed with the multicast because I know it can do that. So it can take down your network if you're not, because then you're pushing all the data to each machine simultaneously, as opposed to, you know, one bit across all the machines, two bits across all the machines. So that's something that I need to work on and mess with myself.
And the price tag ain't bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's free.
Yeah. I've used it a couple times, and the first time I used it, Dore talked about this, I mean, maybe in the first 10, 20 episodes of this show, you know, 3.5, 4, 5 years ago, but and even hinted at it early in this conversation. It's not a new flashy, newfangled GUI. It's text-based. And if you're not reading it and paying attention to exactly what you're doing, yeah, you can wreck some stuff up, man. It's like throwing a monkey wrench in there, you know. But I've used it twice, or excuse me, three times. One for a customer to create a restore image, and then twice for two laptops that one of them I purchased for my wife, just to have a fresh image of that brand new Windows install, so that when I went to sell the laptop, I literally just throw that back on there, and it's pristine and new from a software standpoint.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to once in a while image the wrong way. Image a blank drive and overwrite a full drive. Yeah.
Right.
But I'll say now, I don't know if it's me or Clonezilla, in the last like 4 or 5 times I've used it, which I don't use it all the time, which you think that's when I would do it. For the last 4 or 5 times I've used it, it's just worked perfect. And I'll say, thankfully, Clonezilla Live is UEFI compatible. So works just fine with Windows 8 and Secure Boot and everything else.
Yeah. I did have issues initially years ago, and I haven't, you know, once you start working on one way, you kind of have a hard time going the different way. When you go to download Clonezilla, you have two options. You have the stable or the, what's the other one? The stable or the alternative versions. And I have always, I had trouble with the stable version, so I've always just gone to alternative version, and it seems to have worked much better for me. That's just me. I just kind of got burnt a couple times, and we just found that the alternative version was, when I was doing this is when kind of, this was the rise of desktop Linux, you know, becoming more popular. So this was like 4 years, probably 5 years ago. That's when all this was happening. So the stable, I know the stable was based on, Debian, if I remember correctly, and the alternative was based on Ubuntu, and the alternative Ubuntu version just seemed to work just a little bit better.
Yep.
Now, and I haven't gone back to TriStable. I've just kind of stuck with what works.
Yeah, and that to me was one of the most confusing things, was they have stable and alternative stable. That's that name really confused me. I literally had to look at it for 10 minutes.
Well, the alternative stable, you know, his parents didn't quite, you know, give him enough hugs.
Exactly.
He's sort of, you know, he's more street smart rather than book smart. You know, he's got a couple tattoos.
Right, Buddy Stable.
He smokes clove cigarettes, but he's stable.
Right.
He's just alternative stable.
And it still is Ubuntu based versus Debian based. So that pretty much goes right along with that.
Yeah.
So it's based on a derivative of Debian, but it's alternative yet stable.
Right.
Fantastic. Moving on. Okay. Everybody knows I love my Linux fests, and it's been too damn long, almost over a year since I've been to one. However, it's confirmed. I am going to be at Linux Fest Northwest this year. Up in Bellingham, Washington, April 25th and 26th, I will be there. And yeah, if you guys are going to be in the area, please hit me up beforehand. Hit me up at Google+. Let me know, because I'll be looking to enjoy just the area. From what I understand, the festival is great. Martin, you've been to the fest before, at least a couple of years, right?
Yeah. Yep. Actually, it's not too far from either of us. I have my best friend lives right around the corner from he's the one who told me about it. He says, you know, every year there's some kind of a geeky something that goes on here. You should check it out. And I looked and I said, oh, it's a Linux fest. I'll be there. And so I usually, If the whole group's not going, then I just stay with him and his wife and kids, and we just walk around the corner. And yeah, it's right there at the Bellingham Technical College, Bellingham, Washington. Just a really cool town. It's a college town, but it's a small little town. It's got enough pubs to serve everybody. I've gotten in trouble before, which is the only place I've ever gotten in trouble was in Bellingham, Washington. So, and if we get tired of it, we could just go up to Canada.
There you go. Now are you going to be at Linux Fest Northwest 2015?
I hope so. Or you're all walking.
Yes.
Yes, I will be there. Theater, I am.
Theater of the mind, Martin. Theater of the mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, I will be there. I would love to join you, Cody Cooper.
Okay. All right. All right. Do we know anyone else that is basically committed to coming to the fest this year that we could announce on the show this evening?
My son's going to be there.
Okay.
So, I mean.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Lunchbox?
Yes.
It is. Yeah. Do you mind saying your son's first name on the show?
Oh, his name's Jonah.
Yeah, Jonah, a.k.a. Jonah Obando, a.k.a. Lunchbox, will be at Linux Fest Northwest 2015.
Were you looking for somebody with a little more star power?
I've met your son. He's quite the competent lad, I will say. Is there anybody else that we know that's going to be there? Speak now or forever hold your peace?
Not that I would really care to meet.
Nah, probably not.
I'll just say... Cody's words of encouragement towards Martin's son, it's few and far between, so that's really high praise. I will put it like this. I am committed to going to Northwest Linux Fest. It's set in stone yet, but I'm committed to going. That's what I will say now.
I'll take it. I already bought your broom, so you have to come.
Yeah.
Right.
Please don't make me waste a queen bed.
I'm not. The tickets are purchased. The tickets aren't purchased. They will be, but it just hasn't been set in stone yet. I have the chisel. I got the stone tablet. It's just the finalization of it is needed.
So a door will be at Linux Fest Northwest 2015, ladies and gentlemen.
And I encourage everybody who is going to go, who likes to have fun and have a good time on your Android or even your iOS, and I extremely doubt it's available on a Windows Phone, download Voxer. I doubt it. Yeah, download Voxer, V-O-X-E-R, and if you want a week or a couple days or today, ping me and tell me you're going to be at the fest, and I can create, because I'm a Voxer business, a Voxer pro user, I can create groups of 10 or more people, and then we can have a Voxer chat going, so...
It is on Windows Phone 8.
Oh, wow, shot. So no first way. Thing in the morning...
No Blackberries, though, I apologize.
Oh,
well. No, well, what the hell is on Blackberry?
All right, dust.
Governments. So, like, first thing in the morning, Saturday, you can go in the Voxer chat and say, okay, I'm up. Where's everyone going to go for breakfast? And we can, like, what's it called? Like, crowd mob or mob crowd or...
go eat. Mob source. Flash mob.
Yeah, we can, like, flash mob the local IHOP or something.
There we go.
Well, I do know that from here, there's a couple guys that come, David Strader. Mm-hmm. David Strader. Okay. Actually, they were there with HPR. They go up there every year.
Oh, nice.
I know they've already asked me.
Is it David Witham? Is that
yes,
sound
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. There's two of them.
Yeah, David Witham. Yeah.
And so they go every year, and they've pinged us already about going.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best to have at least some amount of swag. I will say, I feel confident in saying, because I didn't really check, I believe I gave out almost as much types, diversity, and amount of swag at OLF as any vendor. Now, maybe not more, because, you know, those little $1.50 USB cables, you can afford a lot of them. Yeah. Other people might have gave more, but I gave away mugs, T-shirts, stickers, hats, books. I gave away, and I'm going to try to give away stuff again at this conference, which means, hey, guys, do you mind if I get a box or two shipped to your address? So I don't have to take it across the U.S.
Of course.
Sounds great.
Good. Thank you.
Send it to me. It's already halfway there.
No, figured, yeah, that's true.
I figured if I asked you guys during the show, you couldn't say no.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, not it.
Okay. Yep. Oh, man. No. Here we go.
Yeah,
my wife is going to be upset.
Put some jerky in that and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to throw this out there. I already told a couple people this. And I will say that we've already had people reach out, because I kind of soft announced I was going to be on there 2-3 weeks ago, as Martin somewhat did as well. We're already reached out to by some of the community. If we get enough people together that say, I'm going to be there, I mean, like a sizable group, we can, I'm not going to promise, but we'll try to facilitate some sort of a Podnuts meetup. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know how much it's, I mean, how long it's going to be. I don't know where it's going to be. I don't know what's going to entail. I don't know. But I'm saying, if you're going to be going to the fest, or if you live within the vicinity, Martin and I live, what, 5-6 hours away? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dora will be flying in to our area, and we'll be driving up together. What I plan on, we have a variety of portable recording devices. We can get some potentially some content, you know, during the trip to post to special episodes. There's all sorts of great opportunities here for to just have a general good time. And if you've never been to a fest, and if you're within driving distance, if you live in the state of Washington at all, please come out. Admission is absolutely free. There are some supporter packages that I believe start at, is it 150 or 250, something like that, Martin?
Let me find out.
I think it's $150. However, you can make donations, I believe, and purchase swag while you're there if you're not going to get a supporter package, but admission is absolutely free. You get to walk around. There will be other podcasters there. There will be vendors there, obviously. And if you want to get a really two main reasons you want to go to fests, for the talks and for the people. If you want to get an idea of what kind of talks are going to be there, there are already a list of proposed talks, i.e. somewhat nailed down talks, listed at the website on linuxfestnorthwest.org. So I would urge you to go check that out. They do have, I will say, I was speaking with someone that we all know and a couple other people about their proposed security track. Looks very interesting, and I would want to attend nearly every talk in that track. It looks very good.
Very cool. The only thing I'll say, this is the kind of thing that literally scares me. Okay. Decade plus ago, Linus Torvalds said something to the effect of, I'm sure this is not completely accurate, but it's close. When Microsoft starts developing for Linux, we won. Okay. One of the gold sponsors for this fest is Microsoft openness. I'm just saying, that's a little scary.
Also, the fact it's within proximity to their main campus, their main area, I can understand that. You're already hearing, well, it's not a hearing in the news, it's rumor. I mean, they're legit, you know, they're giving money to CyanogenMod. They are now developing applications to be used on future Samsung phones as default apps. I mean, Microsoft is seeing this as a platform, and you know what? As awful as an experience as Windows Mobile is, you guys can say whatever you want. It's terrible.
Oh, no. I believe it's probably a good experience.
The world, it's a good experience if you've never experienced anything else. It's awesome.
Well, no. It just has limited app availability. I believe the experience is probably really good. A, Microsoft ain't cool or hip, so no one wants to go out and buy one.
Right.
Two, they have the marketing campaign of 13 half-dead chimpanzees running it. They just don't do marketing good ever. And I'll say, I have a little insider secret that says literally the largest installation on Microsoft Azure is Red Hat servers.
Yep.
Which doesn't shock me. I'm going to say that.
I will say this on the record, and yes, I have used the platform, and I've spoken to many people who have used the platform, and I always pitch this analogy, and they nod their head and they laugh every time. It's a lot like this. Your dad hasn't been in your life for a long time, and he comes back. He's like, kid, we're going to Disneyland. And then he takes you into the car. He's like, we're going to Disneyland. And then he takes you to Chuck E. Cheese, and half the rides are closed.
Too soon.
and that is the Windows Mobile experience. Now
you can still enjoy it; it just ain't the same.
Oh, you can still enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, you know, you got one ball for the skee ball. You know,
right.
You know,
and at Disney World, there's a mouse. At Chuck E. Cheese, there's a rat. A little different.
That's very true. Was it? It wasn't you. No, it. We know a certain Podnuts host that used to get money being.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Yeah.
One of his jobs was walking around in that suit. I'm just saying. Wasn't me. You know why? Because I would have been in the news.
Yeah, me either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, yeah, so Door, 100%, 110% confirmed for Linux Northwest. You heard it here from my mouth. He's nodding his head. You can't see it in the audio show.
Well, I've already dedicated, because I've already told a couple people, like one of the guys I told, Joe Heck, used to live up by there, lives in Florida now, really nice guy. One of the guys, I think when he goes there, I'm going to, he said he has talked to his wife, but he thinks he can go. I'm going to be very intimidated by this man, because he has done more for computing in relation than I've done to create my own children. This guy has a lot of cred that I'm not sure he can talk about all that much, but he's really smart. And he's the kind of guy who's going to be there who I'm really happy to see. I mean, I'm happy to see Martin. I'm happy to see Cody. I'm happy to see anybody else from Podnuts who can show up, especially if you guys do a little what I'll call Podnuts bombing, which is just randomly walk around and scream Podnuts, because that's what I like to do.
I do that at home. Scares my wife.
Scares my dog. We can't encourage that, but if it happens, oh, thank you.
Yeah, like I'll say, the funnest time I did it was we were at LLF, and Dan Washko was at his table, and he had a bunch of group of people there, and he recorded the "Who's the best tech show?" or whatever, and everyone screams, and I was like behind the curtain, like about 20 feet away, and I waited for them to say that, and then I heard them say, "Tech show," and I waited like 2 extra seconds, and I went, "Podnuts!" And then I just like ran away like a little girl.
That's awesome. Okay.
Okay. Now to the actual links.
Here we go.
Since we've been doing this for about an hour. Okay. I honestly can't even explain this. I'm just going to read like their highlights, their taglines, if you will. It is at TuxEmon.org. Okay, here's the three taglines on it: open source turn-based RPG, completely open source monster fighting RPG, capture and battle monsters against others. Second tagline: online play, battle friends over the internet and walk a round with them in an open world. And the third one, mobile controller. Use your Android device, or I believe iOS device, as your controller for a whole new playing experience. This is a completely open GPL, Python-based, Creative Commons licensed content game. Not a lot of games go that far in licensing. This does. And just because this really is completely open, completely free, completely able to download and play with, I wanted to mention it on the show. I love this idea. I am going to download it. I'm going to play with it. I love the idea of the mobile controller, because then you can take your Linux-based home theater PC, install this, play the game on your TV, but use your phone as the controller. I think that's pretty cool.
That is cool. And have you had a chance to play this pretty extensively at Aldor?
Zero, actually. I saw a couple people ping it on Google Plus, and I bookmarked it maybe 2 or 3 days ago, but I didn't actually get a chance to look at it until earlier today, and you know, just a bit of a crazy day, so couldn't check it out.
Okay.
But I will say, well, I am going to install it, and when I do, my user ID is going to be DoorDoorGeek, unless some trolly troll out there, Venstone, I'm putting you out, tries to register my name early.
He wouldn't do that.
I don't know. He might.
I wouldn't put it past Jordan, but I think Pedro and Ben would be legit gentlemen and just leave it available for
him. I don't know. I think he would do it and then advertise it on his show over at LinuxGamecast.com.
Oh, that's a very good point. Mm-hmm. Linux Gamecast Weekly, because they provide content every week.
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah, when I was a kid, totally dug RPGs, and I still love it as a genre right now, but with life and stuff and things, I can't devote a lot of time to one of these. However, okay, this looks good. Go ahead.
Well, there's an option then. What if you really enjoy the aspect, the idea, the strategy that goes on in an RPG, but you don't necessarily have time to play it? There's an option for you out there. Last week, I brought the website Bundle Stars up in the podcast. If you go to Bundle Stars, all bundles, and go to the Game Factory Bundle Special Edition, For $9.99, you can buy 4 completely Linux compatible game creation tools. One of them is RPG, one of them is side scroller, one of them is first person, and one of them, I don't know. So there's 4 of them. Looking at the videos of these things, I'll say, don't expect to do this on your Linux installed Chromebook. This looks like it requires a little bit of beef, a little bit of horsepower. But for $10, you get 4 game creation tools. I am wanting really bad to get this installed on a computer and tell my son to go hog wild.
Yeah, ever since you brought this bet last week, bundlestars.com, it's something I visit almost daily. And they have flash sales all the time. Some of the games are Linux compatible, some are not. I mean, you can't put too much past them, but yeah, totally dig this site.
Right. This is like what I heard on, I believe, Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast this week, which is if you take a look at left-handed people, they're very low percentage. If you take a look at the star athletes in the world, left-handed ones are actually a higher percentage than that. If when I go to this website, if this was my only viewpoint onto gaming in Linux, I would believe anywhere from 40 to maybe 70% of all games run on Linux, because that's about the percentage of games I see on this website that do run on Linux. Now, not all of them, but there's a good, really good percentage. And I will say, unlike the Humble Bundle, the thing that I like is right there when it tells you the game, right underneath it, it tells you what OSs it will run on. I don't have to do any investigating, I don't have to do any digging, I don't have to do any calling, any Googling or nothing. It just tells me right there, and I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, that is an added benefit too. They're very, very forward about listing in the main page for any of these bundles, or if you go to look at the games individually to look at details or watch the trailer, it's all right there in your face. You don't need to dig 5, 6, 7 layers deep to go, is this compatible on Linux?
Right.
It shows you right there. Very cool.
Yeah, and I just love the idea of making games, because I would say this. I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Between my Legend of Zelda on NES and Ocarina of Time on N64, if I could have had the ability to make games with something that didn't require knowing C++ kind of thing and doing it on like a 386, you know, I would have loved it. I would have went ballistic. I would have literally created as many universes as I could in just gaming. Now, maybe not zombie shooter, first-person shooter games, but some kind of games. And I really, man, if I could, you know, cut off one of my fingers to grant a wish, first off, it would be in my left hand, but it would be that my kid, one of my kids, would be really enthusiastic about creating something, developing something, and not just sitting back and playing Minecraft or watching cartoons.
There you go. Have you played The Binding of Isaac?
You showed me the video for that, and I am terrified to play that game because there's only so many free hours in every week.
Yeah. If you love old school Legend of Zelda, you gotta play The Binding of Isaac. It's quite a trip. The content is not for everybody, I will say that. Go watch some trailers, investigate it. It's a good time.
Well, you told me about that game the week after I found the game It'll Do. The word little minus the L, it'll do. And that to me was kind of filling that Zelda-ish like need. Again, not really completely family friendly, but fun.
No. This is, well, there is a family in this game, but it's definitely not friendly.
Yeah. Okay, the next two links are related, very related, heavily related. Brother and sister, if you will. The one Martin discovered and shared with us, it's called Ubuntu After Install. This is the kind of thing where, honestly, if I was doing my own Ubuntu spin, because let's just face it, most distros that are based on Ubuntu are just spins. They're not distros. If I was doing my own Ubuntu spin, this is the kind of tool I would have installed by default, because it's commonsensical. It's the kind of app that when you load, you near instantaneously understand what it is, what it offers, and how it works. Martin, I was going to say this was a really good find and a really heavily polished post-installation tool.
Yeah, I've just, you know, we've all talked about Nanite before, and I think this just you know, when after you get done installing any kind of a Linux distro, you end up going through and trying to figure out, like, I've got a script that I have that I run through and I install that. Probably 90% of this, what's on here, is there, and you could just do it all right there. You go.
Yeah, just a quick PPA install away. Mm-hmm. Install all kinds of stuff from XBMC, VLC, Dropbox, Grive Tools, Skype, LibreOffice, Google Chrome, Variety, Unity Tweak Tool, Restricted Extras, FileZilla.
Escape, yeah. Scribus.
So you install the PPA, right? And then it just is the app. And then inside the app, you select what items you want and then just run it. And then install from there. Then it does it. So it's not all on, you know, it's not all together, which is nice. So you don't have to install. That's the problem I have with, you know, you find people online who have the 15 things you must do after you install Ubuntu or something like that. And they say, run this script. Well, some of that stuff I don't want. You know, I want to, you know, this gives you the chance to have the script, but you select it to what you want to do with it.
So what you're telling me is you really don't want that extra 400 megs of KDE libraries, Martin?
Not with Quazzle.
Not with Quazzle. Well, and here's the other big plus I like to this app. This is a differentiator between polished and unpolished in form of application design and execution.
There you go.
It fails soft. If you select something to install and it either is not compatible with your version of Ubuntu or there's something broken, it fails soft. It puts a little red dot next to the app and it notifies you there's a problem with this application. Instead of having your complete desktop lock up and have issues like that, this fails soft. This, to me, is an extremely new user-friendly method of batch installing. Once you get past the adding of the PPA, that's the only part that requires any brain higher functions.
And I can speak to the ease of this because I recently built a new machine and installed Ubuntu 14.04 right out of the box. And then I used this because Martin had sent Dor and I a link probably a week or two prior. And yeah, it was very easy. And yeah, feeling soft. I can't remember, one of the first three or four applications didn't load for whatever reason. But what was nice is out of the, I don't know, 15 to 20 apps that I selected to be installed, it didn't get to that point and halt and then not install the rest of them. It just said, okay, and just kind of speed bump, went around, did the rest of them in order, and gave me an error log, let me know what happened. Because what I'm guessing is, as new versions of these come out, if they're not 100% compatible with the version or the updated version of the OS that you have, then it may not install correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, oh yeah, very, very pleasant experience overall. It was very good. Martin, have you had a chance to use this on any of your machines yet?
No, and I was just thinking I should spin up another distro just to try it. You know, there's a couple of distros I want to try and, you know, just to look at, and I will probably do that and then just go ahead and run this right after it just so I can have it.
Okay, that's a very good point. And did you also bring the next link as well?
No, that was one that I found.
Okay.
This is not as polished, not even close to as polished as the one Martin brought. But what this one does, Martin mentioned he had a script to do all this post-install. That's basically what this one does. So if you want to have your own script, this to me is a good kickstarter to getting that done. Not as much software offered in this one, I will say that. I don't believe not as much, period. But what this does is basically a... web interface. It looks like support for Arch Linux, OpenSUSE, and Fedora is coming soon on this website. This is called, I'm sorry, etcinit.com, which is the folder pattern in Linux, etc/init. So it's etcinit.com. Soon you'll be able to do it for other distros. Right now it's just Ubuntu specific. You basically go through like Nightnight, click the boxes, click the button, and what you get in this one is a script that you can run basically on any time on any Ubuntu-based computer, and it will attempt to install all those applications. I like the idea of this one for someone who wants to end up with their own customized post-installation script for installing everything that they need.
Right, because it does give you a... kind of a platform to start with, and then from there you can just add to it. And now you've taken a little bit of automation from this site plus stuff that you already know, and you, now you can have your own script.
Yeah, pretty straightforward, pretty easy. Nothing super science-y going on, I'll say, just a simple thing to use. Okay, what I have next is for someone with a hell of a lot of time on their hands. And I mean literally. You either just got laid off from your job or you're 17 years old, something. If you go to socallinuxexpo.org/scale/13x/video, you're presented with a drop-down list of about 8-9 rooms, and these are all the rooms that were at this scale that just ended. You can click on any one of those rooms, then you click a button, and then you're forwarded to a YouTube link that's a 6-hour, 44-minute length video of every talk given this year at Scale.
This is actually really cool. I hadn't seen this before. So on the webpage, they have the Scale logo. They have a picture of the presenter, and then they have all of their slideshows, their slide sets. So you see the presenter and the slide sets all in a YouTube video.
Yeah, this to me is the example of the reason why Scale is quote-unquote expensive is because this has a certain production value to it and a certain amount of equity behind it where they can do this kind of stuff.
And Scale just ended on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and this is already up.
Oh, yeah. This has been up for, I think, more than a day. So, Scale, don't play around, apparently.
Hey, man, when you're in LA, it's just coffee and Linux. I was thinking, I said coffee, but then I realized that's more of a Pacific Northwest thing. So, I got nothing.
I'm just along for the ride.
For what would be involved in LA? I got nothing.
Bad 90s shows on Fox?
That's right.
I guess. I don't know. Something like that.
Bad 90s shows on Fox.
Like, I don't know. Beverly Hills 90210. I don't know.
That's not a bad 90s show. That was a great show.
Speak for yourself.
Noah's Place wasn't so good, but...
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I used to have a game. The game was called How to Ruin 90210 for Your Wife and Her Sister.
Is that watch it ahead of time?
No. I just drank and then did commentary, and
yeah,
they didn't appreciate it.
I can see why. Yes.
Okay. I have to hold on. So there was one episode. It was in season one somewhere. Brenda, the daughter. Okay, Brenda Walsh. She walks in. She's wearing a sweater that literally looks like the landscape of a Pac-Man video game, and she walks in. And someone says, "Hey, Brenda, what have you been up to?" And I said, "Just eating ghosts and fruit all day." And I thought it was the best damn thing I'd ever heard in my life. So I fell out of my chair laughing, to which the two of them folded arms, looking at me, shaking their head. And I said, "If you don't get that, that's your problem." And I went to bed.
I'm trying to find the sweater.
Dude, it was one of the most brilliant moments of magnificence that I've ever done in my whole life. I mean,
did you do a mic drop?
I should have. I need to just carry a mic with me in my back pocket, right? It's like, I had another really good mic drop. I can't, I'll mention it on a different show. But yeah, it was really good.
One mic drop for the show, please.
One mic drop in front of a crowd of 500 people. And I owned, oh man, it was good. Okay. Anyway,
I'm just along for the ride.
If you're being arrested, it doesn't count.
No, this was at a.
You don't have to go do it. I was just.
I'll go into detail about it. All you need to say is on a future episode, or I'll tell this story. How about I'll save the story for Linux Fest Northwest. All you need to say is four words: mic drop and family feud. That's it. That's all you need to do. All right. Okay. All right. So moving right along, let's see. What else we got here?
I don't know. I'm looking for the sweater too.
I'll find a picture of it. I'll post it on Google Plus. If everybody thinks that was, it's funny. It's great. It'll be good. It'll be good. Okay. So Scale 13 2015 just happened with the last 7 to 10 days. Is that right, guys?
Yep.
From the time we're recording this. And apparently it's the place to be, or it's one of the places to be throughout the year if you're a fan of the Linux operating system. Very, very good. I'm seeing already some great photos come down from the community that were there. Let's see. We had
Lord D was there. I don't know who else was.
I think there's another Matt. No, not yet.
I know there's a couple other people there, but honestly, yeah. I can't remember. What I have next here is a link. I honestly got it from Mary T. If you don't know who Mary T is, I'm sorry, but she's one of the hosts from Sunday Morning Linux Review at smlr.us. Utterly cool woman with a lot of knowledge and a lot of just happiness. She's just fun to talk to, fun to listen to. She posted this on Google Plus, and this is the kind of thing that just hit me in the sweet spot, if you will. It's called CalCurse, CalCurse. This is like the perfect calendar and scheduling application tool when you're on a extremely low-powered system, like I'd say a Raspberry Pi. This is a command line / ncurses interface to calendaring and scheduling. It ain't fancy. It ain't pretty. It probably won't work with Google Calendar, but it does have support for iCalendar format, which is the Cal Dev format, I believe. So you can connect this to remote calendars, I believe. I'm sorry. This is just the kind of thing that I just think is really cool. I love the fact that somebody worked on this. I love the fact that it will literally run on like the original Raspberry Pi just fine. And I want to thank Mary for sharing that link with everybody.
Yeah, that's pretty slick. It's not, like you said, not pretty, but functional.
Oh, yeah, not pretty at all.
And actually, some of that, one of these ones, actually it shows what it is, the day. It has a calendar off to the side, a full-month calendar. I mean, it's super functional.
Yeah, this would be like the kind of perfect thing to have in, like, dare I say, a smaller screen or like a picture frame, just telling you your coming agenda items in your meetings, I'll say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool. And again, Mary T, thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing, and thank you very much for being on a podcast there. That's cool.
And I got to say, Mary, anytime you or Tony Bemis want to come on the show, you're more than welcome. In fact, Tony's already been on the show. We might as well have all of the good hosts of SMLR on and have Mary on as well. That is, of course, me referencing my fake rivalry with Matt Enders, which doesn't really exist, but it sort of does in the hearts of the few. And no, he's great, too. He can come on, but he has to come on after Mary.
Cody, as long as you believe it, it's real.
That's right. Just like... all sorts of like how funny that 90210 joke was.
Exactly. If you believe it, it's real.
That's just legit truth, though, man. I'm telling you what. I'm going to find a picture of that sweater. Okay.
Good luck.
Cool. And I believe that was our last link for the week, gentlemen. Cool. So lots of good stuff this week. Very, very good show. Martin, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. Martin, for those of you who don't know, on top of hosting Geeksters and being the de facto standard when it comes to Obando computing, he is Obando computing. He's very, very busy. He also does the show notes for Linux to the rest of us. So he's always with us in heart and spirit, whether in the background, in the chat, or otherwise. So thank you for gracing us with your actual video telepresence this evening, Martin. Thank you.
Well, now that you see my face, you may not want me back.
As long as you stay gruntled, as long as you're the most gruntled person I know, you are always welcome back.
I try to stay gruntled. I try.
For those of you who have never seen Martin, imagine Paul Bunyan, but angrier. I don't know. What color is your ox, Martin? What's a more imposing color than...
Black.
A large black ox.
With red eyes.
With red eyes, yeah. And a tail made of fire.
Right. It kind of looks like a devil. It looks like the dog from Ghostbusters.
That's very good. Oh, dude, we have to stop there because I can just quote that to all in.
Okay. Peace out to Harold Ramis. Sorry. Pour some out to my homies.
Rest in peace.
I am the key master.
There is no Dana, only Zool.
Ah, ladies and gentlemen,
we've got one! Okay, wow.
Don't cross the streams.
Did you hear that? That was a show derailing. This is me pulling the wheel, getting it back on track. Okay, here we go. All right, cool. Okay, so Martin, once again, thank you very much. Dor, at the very least, I will see you in
I'm gonna see him
weeks. Yeah.
Soon enough.
Yeah, I'll see him soon enough. Mm-hmm. Linux Fest Northwest, people, it's happening. This is going to be epic. It's great. Oh, yeah, and here's the thing, too. And I'm going to cut the audience right in half and make a bunch of people half angry, but no, I'm doing it firmly tongue-in-cheek. Door, you're going to finally, now that you'll be in the Pacific Northwest, you will now know what real beer tastes like.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I want to throw this out there before I
forget. And real rain. Don't forget to bring your Birkenstocks.
I've been in Seattle where in less than an 8-minute walk, it went from sunny sky to rain up to my knees. I've experienced the real rain. I don't need to experience that again.
That's called Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're welcome.
I want to throw this out there because I don't know if it's my lack of research because, you know, ADHD and getting distracted. I am literally mad. I want to use a much more profane word, but I am really literally mad out there that I keep finding all these websites telling me how to make a custom portable emulator gaming computer, handheld gaming computer, like a Raspberry Pi/Game Boy thing. What I can't find is places to buy the pieces. Everybody expects me to have a friggin' 3D printer behind this curtain to print my own pieces kind of thing. If someone out there knows of a resource where I can go to and get the components for it, or I'm lazy, already pre-built for me, let me know, because if I have to go through a 10-plus hour or whatever it is, I don't know, plane trip, playing emulated games on something where I don't have to worry about the battery draining on my phone might be a plus. I'm just saying.
Well, the parts, a lot of the parts that you have to buy, from what I've seen, when it comes to, let's say it's a Raspberry Pi build, or in your case, perhaps the Banana Pi build, you can get the compatible TFT screens just about anywhere. I mean, eBay, Amazon, anywhere.
Yeah,
but Adafruit's a good place. Okay, so, Pi components and screen aside, you're talking about buttons and components, right?
Everything else. Most, I can't just put duct tape around the screen.
Yeah, I know, but most of the internals, like the buttons, okay, we're talking like the D-pad, the actual buttons, start, select, A, B, those are usually just from a dismantled controller, okay? Now, the frame itself, you get a hold of the 3D printing schematic, the file, and if you have a local hacker space that has one, they can either rent you time or print it for you for a fee. That's what they do for the community. In most cases, I know that at the very least, that there's got to be some good ones in our neck of the woods, Martin, because I know that, and there's a good one in Eugene, and there's at least two or three in the Portland area, and probably several in between.
You 3D printing companies?
No. Local hacker spaces that have multiple. I know there's one in Eugene. Oh. They have like at least five or six.
Yeah, a lot of MakerBot stuff.
Yeah. So there's an idea for you, Dor. Now, Dor, that is going to require you to go outside and talk to people in your local area.
Can I just email them?
You could come here a couple days early.
Yeah.
Martin, what? Come on now.
Now you come on.
It's all about making the ride home epic. You're going to be so hungover, you're not going to be able to view a screen.
What about the ride there?
Pick up a plane.
The ride there, as long as it's anything better than that bus ride you had to Nelf last year, I think you're cake.
New just pilot. Whole bunch of guys.
Yeah.
6 hours of apparently a podcast.
If someone out there knows of a resource that I can utilize to get this done, please podcast at linuxfortherestofus.com.
There's got to be someone out there with a 3D printer in our community somewhere. And what a better way to support the show than to say, I helped Dor not be bored for 20 hours. Anyhow, I'm just throwing that out there. One quick aside before we wrap up. If you are going to Linux Fest Northwest, or if you live in the area and you can't make it, and you know good places that you would recommend to either eat or get good beverage in the Bellingham area, please send me an email to cody@podnuts.com. Because I'm already looking at Yelp, at Urban Spoon, talking to locals, getting my battle plan together.
You know, Bellingham's not that big, right?
It's a college town. They got to have something.
It's not what they do, but it's not like it's not Cambridge. It's not like we're going to Nelf or we're going to that. It's probably 7,000 people.
Okay, so could we just drive somewhere like near there?
Oh, yeah. We could drive to Canada.
I ain't going to Canada.
John Newsteader, if you know good places to eat north of the border in Canada, where would that be? I'm so bad with geography.
Canada's north.
But
just No. I wasn't sure how bad you were.
Directly north of Washington, am I right, in that it's Vancouver? Is that right?
Yes.
Vancouver, okay. And Prince Edward Island, I believe. Do you know who's up by there, don't you?
No.
Prince Edward?
Chris Barquat.
Oh, really?
He's somewhere up there, yeah. Somewhere where there's a lot of money and a lot of Macs.
That's Canada.
Yeah.
So we can just go up there on his dime then?
If you
that means like a passport.
That means you got to also get a gun across the line to pull the money out of his pocket. He's tight, man.
No.
Bellingham is a nice college town with a lot of local brew pubs that they do their own beer and stuff like that. So it's good.
You know what that would be, though? That would be fantastic. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
I don't think so. Yeah, and he could show me his Lenovo and I could hate him for it. Anyhow, we got to wrap this up. This is going way too long. Okay, guys, as always, thank you so much for watching the show or listening to the show. If you're not watching us live, which has now been pretty steady, Tuesday evenings, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, at podnuts.com/live. Is that correct, Dor?
Yes, sir.
Cool. You can check us out live. Please, if you'd like to send an email to the show, send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want to send in a voicemail, please dial 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3 something. I always forget.
Damn, 3-NUT.
Is it what? Yeah, 3-NUT. That's right. 707-676-3-NUT.
No, here's the good thing. I know on Android devices, and I'm 99% sure on iOS devices, you can literally pull up your text keyboard and type the word PODNUT and hit send, and it does automatically change.
Yeah, that's all you need to know. You're not even focused on the numbers anyway. If someone says, dial 1-800-HOT-GAMES, you're not, what is, I need to translate it into numbers first, and then, no, you're just dialing H-O-T, then G-A-M-E-S. I don't know what that number gets you to, and I don't want to know, to be honest. It probably is something else.
Speaking of numbers, one of the things I thought was really hysterically funny, if you have an old NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, and you turn around and you look at the back, there's a phone number on there, you can still call that phone number and ask for help with games.
No way.
Wait.
Dude, I've got one. We need to call them live on the show next week. I just bought a USB adapter for my classic NES controller. Oh, it's here somewhere in this pit of nothingness. Right next to my box fan, Jeff Owens. Get your eyes checked, Grandpa. Okay. Here we go. All right. So, yes. Voicemail, email covered. As always, please, if you'd like to support the show, please use our affiliate links at podnuts.com/Amazon and also podnuts.com/eBay. If you're into supporting good causes, please check out our good friend Jonathan Nato over at theacf.tk. That is the Accessible Computing Foundation, making sure that people with disabilities aren't left behind when it comes to the technological present and future. For as little as $2 a month, you can become a regular contributor to the Accessible Computing Foundation. And let me tell you, I've been for almost 2 years now. Every time I see that money come out of my bank account every month, it brings me a little bit of warmth inside. You can also help support Jonathan with his custom Linux distro, which is Sonar GNU Linux at sonargnulinux.com. Go there. It has folded in a lot of the accessibility software that is absent in many current distros that can help people with disabilities use Linux. So if you want to support the program, or if you know someone who could be benefited by using any of that software or that distro, please check it out. As always, I'm Cody Cooper. Thank you very much once again for listening. And please remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.